Okay, so today we're hopefully going to get through two examples of designing PID controllers, and we're actually going to do a PD controller and then a PI controller. All right. So this first example, we're going to start with model of the armature controlled DC motor. So we did that example, get the transfer function and everything back in class about a month ago. So we'll skip to, we found the transfer function. So I guess I'll draw a simple drawing of this guy up. Basically our input, let's do it this way. So the rotation of the motor, we had an input that was voltage. And it was voltage on the armature, so it's VA. And we found some transfer function. It looks something like that. And this whole block was essentially a simplification of a much larger block. You can look at figure 220 if you got your book with you to see where this came from. And we had constants K1 as a function of all the motor parameters. And tau 1 is a function of those parameters as well. And we'll just leave them as K1 and tau 1 right now. So basically, we have a bunch of motor parameters and the inertia of the motor, of the output, the load you're trying to move. Okay. So what we really want to do, we have this armature-controlled DC motor, and we'd like to know, well, what do we have to do to VA in order to get the motor to turn to some angle that I want it to turn to? It maybe hold there. So we want to be able to maybe use this DC motor system as a positioning system. So you can imagine I had this motor on the joint of a robotic arm or something. And I want to be able to control it to go to a certain angle or to track a certain trajectory through space. Okay. So our goal is essentially to make the angle track some desired angle theta d. All right. That's our goal for the first part of class today. We want to make theta equal theta d. All right. So where do we start? What do we want to do? Yeah, so we want to get a transfer function. So probably what we're going to start is think about, well, how can I choose VA, right? And if I know this really well, maybe I could back out some kind of information about what VA would need to be to get theta to be theta d. But really about this PID control stuff, let's try one of those, right? So I'm going to call this guy GP. So this is the plant transfer function. That's what we're trying to control. Okay. And it has some output theta, some input VA. Okay. What we're saying is that I need to want to know something about how to choose VA. Okay. And what I want to happen is for theta to be theta d. Well, that kind of shakes out to be our normal transfer function form. So I have some reference command that is my desired angle of this motor. It's going to get compared to the actual angle of the motor shaft. Right. Generate some error signal. Right. We're going to act on that error signal in some way to generate the voltage that goes into the plant transfer function that we're actually dropping across the motor's terminals. Yeah. With me so far? Standard controller setup so far. So, what should GC be? And the example probably gives some kind of a hint. Yeah, it could be some PID controller, it could be PD. How might I choose which one I want to start with? Whether I want to do a PD, PI, PID, the complete form. How might I choose that? Yeah, sure. So we might start with kind of the simplest form. Right, we might start with just a proportional controller. All right, let's do that real quick. This will actually not be in the notes, so make sure you get good notes on this part. Maybe start with proportional only. Okay. So in that case, the transfer function for that control block is just a gain, KP. And then we can see that we have GCGP is that. And we can do the closed loop transfer function if we want. What can we say about this system right away with just proportional control? Anything? Without even looking at the closed loop transfer function. Anything? I'm just asking anything. Can you tell me about the response of the system, its properties? It's going to have high overshoot. Why do you say that? Okay. Depends on the value of KP. So if you increase KP, you increase overshoot. Okay. Right. You're looking at that table, I guess. Yeah. You know the type? You know the system type. What system type is this?
Type 2.
What determines the system type?
The number of
integrators. Number of pure integrators, right? How many do we have? Just one. Right? So this is a type 1 system. So what can you say about the steady state error to a step input? What's the steady state error of a type 1 system to a step input? What's the third option?
Zero.
Yeah, it's going to be zero. So we do have zero, we would have zero steady state error to some kind of commanded theta d, right? So if it's a step input, right? Which is probably kind of what I'm going to be doing. In some sense, right? I'm going to be defining, I want to go to this angle and then that angle. So these could be kind of step inputs. I'm going to go 45 degrees, now back to 30 degrees, 45 degrees. So they're kind of step inputs in desired angle. So what this is telling us is, hey, we have a type 1 system, so we would get there eventually. Doesn't tell us yet. That doesn't tell you how quickly you get there. All right. Let's see. For just the proportional gain, what's the closed loop transfer function? Okay. Is that right? Yes, that's right. Okay, so what can we say about closed loop response? What do you think? Yeah, it's a second order. So a closed loop system is a second order, right? We could write this. Like this to make it maybe a little bit more clear. Okay. So what does that tell you about the system? Yeah, so it's going to be oscillatory.
So increasing KP would increase your natural frequency.
Increasing KP increases my natural frequency, which also does what?
Increase
would be an increase overshoot in this case. All right. Can I do anything here with just proportional control to improve settling time?
No.
Why not?
Because it wouldn't affect your damping.
Right. So my proportional gain, I can crank KP up all I want, and it's going to have no effect really on the settling time, on the damping ratio of this system, of the closed loop system. Okay. So we could look at that, and that's probably a good first couple steps. It's going to be oscillatory. We don't have a whole lot of control over the damping. So we probably don't want such an oscillatory response of our motor, right? We tell it to go to 30 degrees and it oscillates around 30 and would settle eventually to what we told it to, but we have no guarantee of how quickly. So if I want to improve settling time, reduce overshoot, what kind of controller do I need? I need some derivative gain. I need a derivative part of the PD controller, PID controller. So no way to increase damping. Maybe not control is the wrong word in this context. So because this thing is oscillatory and we don't have any way with just proportional control to increase the damping of that closed loop system, well, we're going to need PD control. So then what does our GC become?
KP plus KD S.
Yep. Here's your PD controller. GCGP, we now have. That guy, right? For GCGP. So what's our steady state error to a step input? Yeah, still zero. Okay, so that's a good first check. We added PD control and we didn't affect the steady state error. So we're still going to be good there. We're going to get to what angle we tell it to go to eventually. But we still don't really know how fast. If we write, let's see where I want to do this. Closed loop transfer function. I'm going to have me check that before you write it. Should be right. Yes. Okay. And I could divide by tau 1, and then what do we kind of see here now? Can I increase the damping of this system? Am I playing with my gains?
Yes.
Right. So I can crank up on KD, make this term get higher, which is going to increase our damping for that closed-loop response. So now I do have an additional knob I can tweak to tune my closed-loop performance. Okay. So then the next question is, how do I pick KP and KD? Okay.
So I would pick a small KP and a large KD to reduce your settling time.
Okay.
And overall percent overshoot.
All right. I agree with all of that, pretty much, so far, that you guys have said, as a group.
Isn't there a catch when you do that?
There's catches to a lot of this stuff, yeah. How do we navigate those compromises? Do a rote locus. Yes, we have tools to tell us what KP and KD, what effect they're going to have on closed loop poles as we change it. All right? Okay, we didn't just do that root locus for the fun of it. It's actually a tool we can use. Okay. So, then I guess the next question is, how do I draw the root locus for this system? Yeah, so I could pick some value, whether it's 0 or something else, for KD, and then do a rote locus kind of for KP. And that's kind of what we're going to do. Right. What you'll see most often done is I'm going to rewrite the PD controller. And we kind of looked at this when we were talking about the Ziegler-Nichols. So we start out with this. I'm going to rewrite it that way. Just dividing both terms by KP. And we'll define, usually we'll call it TD, right? Yes. Everybody has their own notation for this term. So we can write this guy like that. Okay. And what we're basically saying, we're going to pick a constant for that ratio and draw a rote locus. And kind of what you're going to do is effectively what we just talked through. I'm going to pick some constant, draw the locus, see what the closed loop response looks like. Then I can maybe tweak this constant a little bit, look at a root locus, see what the response looks like. And then between those two, going back and forth, narrow down on the kind of response I want. All right. So if I write this in that form, I have then I have the constant I'm going to tweak, this KP. Out front of GCGP, that's what I want, right? k times some transfer function for the root locus. Okay. So if we're going to draw the root locus of the system, what's the next step? You can find poles and zeros. All right. So what kind of zeros do we have? What poles do we have?
-1/10.
Yep. So we got open loop poles and zeros. Okay, so let's and we haven't said anything about what tau d and or what td and tau 1 are yet. But we can kind of look at this in the abstract sense if we want. And we'll give us some idea of what we might want TD to be relative to tau 1, which tau 1 is a property of the physical system. All right. So we know we're going to have one pole. Let's see, I'm going to draw the poles. Let's do the open loop ones in green, maybe. So we a pole at 0. Okay. And we could have a situation like this, or we could have a situation like that, right, depending on what the relationship by 1 over these two values are, right? So in this case, zeros to the farther left, in that case, we have that relationship. Okay, so let's just kind of march down the path and looking at these two root loci, right? And again, we're going to know what T1 is. And it, just even mapping out the beginning part of this root locus process without even picking a value of tau d, leaving that kind of flexible right now, whether it's on this side or that side or this side of the pole, can give us some information about where we would want to start out for TD. Or what's even the starting value for that guy? All right. All right. So we have two possible sets of open loop poles. What's next? Drawing a root locus. Yeah, I can draw the real axis parts, right? So where's the real axis part of this one? So I have, that's right. So I have some here. And where else? Infinity from the zero. Okay. How about on this one? Kind of same pattern, right? Yeah, exactly, right? Okay. So what's next? We have asymptotes is pretty close. How many separate loci does this system have? Two. Why two? You have more poles and zeros, and then you have two poles. All right. So what can we say about the plot, the root locus on the right, if we know we have two separate loci? Anything? How many separate loci are on that plot right now? Two. We're done with that one. That's the root locus for that set of open loop poles and zeros. right? You have one loci, open loop pole going to open loop zero, open loop pole going to an open loop zero that's at infinity. So this guy's done already as a root locus. So let's think about this one then. Well, what we know is that actually the 1 over tau 1 is not moving, right? Because this is that tau 1 is what's a physical property of the motor, right? So this pole location is the same, right? If I want a fast, low overshoot response, which one of these would get me there, right? So think about that. So this, as we increase the gain, right, the closed loop poles are going to this zero, right? Remember, your pole that's closest to the imaginary axis is the one that dominates the dynamics. So if this guy is to the right of 1 over tau 1, in this case, right, I can get over to the left of it here, though. Which one of these would be faster? To the left is faster. Yeah, that's what I'm saying, right? So, but this zero, in this case, dictates, and this one's completely done. This zero is as fast as that pole can get. Right, fast as that closed loop pole can get for this case, right? Remember, the location of this is fixed. Right. So I could push this one as high a gain as I want. I might be able to get to a faster response here, is the point I'm trying to get to. Because this zero is limiting how fast we can make that closed loop pole. I can create the gain all I want in this closed loop pole at infinite gain equals the location of that zero.
But on the left side, it would reach up to negative 1 over tau.
On the left side. This left plot?
Yeah.
Well, okay, so, like, yeah, we know that at least one of these will be going there. This guy's going there, right? We have two separate loci, right? So one of these poles is going to be going to that zero, right? But this pole location is fixed. So we know if we can make our zero to the left of the open loop pole, then we can make it faster than it is here. That make a little bit of sense? So that guy's done. We could say stuff about its response already, right? It's going to be a non-oscillatory response. Speed's going to be limited by that zero location. But maybe we can do better. Okay. So let's keep looking at this case. It may turn out we can't do a whole lot better, but we should at least explore that case. All right. Even in this case, we have control over that TD. What can we do with the zero? We can move it. You know, if you wanted this kind of locus and this kind of response, you could move the zero by changing TD closer to that pole. So you could speed it up some by playing with TD. Right. Or maybe we can keep moving it so it crosses over that pole and down the left side. Maybe we can go faster. Right. It could be equal, yeah.
And your locus would be all along the real axis, right? Except for that one spot where...
Yeah, I mean, it'd be just this in the limit that there's no space in there. But you still would have this closed loop pole going to the zero, and from that, or the open loop pole going to the zero, and the open loop pole that's overlapping going out to infinity as you increase gain. All right, so What's next for the root locus on the left? Asymptotes, yes. All right. There are, and you could go through this entire process and solve for all this stuff if you wanted, and you're still going to get this. We're just using a little bit of knowledge about what a root locus looks like. There's two separate loci there. We know there's only two loci, so that has to be it. There's no branching off of that, no breakaway points, anything for the one on the right. So, asymptotes. How do we find those?
Didn't we already find them?
Nope.
You take your denominator and set it equal to zero, right?
Denominator equal to zero. Nope, that's a little bit down the line. We need to find kind of where they're centered at on the real axis, right? And that's the sum. Let me get the subscript right to match the. Hopefully that looks a little bit familiar. So in this case, we have 0. N is the number of poles. We have 2. We have 1, 0. So we're over 1.
Is that some of the negative poles?
Yeah, both of these are negative. Sorry, the one blended it in. But remember that these are written as S plus PJ. Right, so this is actually just the location of the pole. That's TD. Okay. So, okay, what's the angle? Remember that one? Asymptote angle. Just that, right? So we have, try to fit this. 180. And n minus n minus 1, so which is 0. So we have asymptote at 180. So, asymptote at 180. So you can see that here. Even. Asymptotes at 180. Okay. What's next? Could draw the asymptotes. Yeah, we kind of have them drawn already since it's just 180. This is the real axis. So we can look at any of those things, right? We can look at, does this thing go unstable? Right, it's going to cross the imaginary axis. Right. We could look at departure angle matters for what kind of poles? Whoever said that. Yeah, you need complex conjugate. If you don't have complex conjugate poles, then there's no breakaway angle. There's no departure angle to worry about. If you don't have complex conjugate zeros, there's no arrival angle to have to worry about. So we don't have to worry about those steps for this problem. We do have to worry about, would it cross this imaginary axis? So how do I figure that out? So you don't have departure angle because you don't have complex conjugate pairs. But yeah, we have to figure out what's left is for us, where's the departure point? So where does these loci break off the real axis? And then does it cross the imaginary axis? Can it go unstable? So there's a few ways to figure out where you're crossing the imaginary axis, right? The one we did in class, in the examples we worked, basically you set, take a look at your closed loop characteristic equation, plug in I omega, and then solve for the omega, and solve for the real and imaginary omega and k. And solve when that, figure out when that's equal to zero, and that's going to give you some points here. Or not. Okay. Looking at this characteristic equation, however, is this ever going to go unstable? Would this equation ever? So I'm assuming I have positive values of Kp and Kd. Right. We can assume K1 is positive too, because it's based on physical parameters that are all positive. Right. So I have a polynomial with all positive coefficients. Second order polynomial with all positive coefficients, I'm never going to have a negative real part. Right. Yeah, you might have to solve it, but I mean, we can just use some general algebra knowledge. Know that there's no negative real part of any root for this guy. No matter what you pick Kp and Kd to be, as long as they're positive, all right, and K1 is positive, which it should be, because it's positive motor constants that dictate that guy, we're never going to have any negative real parts. So we're not going to go unstable with this. So that's pretty good. Right? So we don't have to worry about crossing the imaginary axis. We're going to go stable. But then we have the breakaway points left. How do we solve for that? Right, so you can take your characteristic equation, which you can write in the one you want to write it in that form. Right. And then you want to set it in some kind of form that your gain you're tweaking is some function of S. And you want to solve where the derivative of that function with respect to K, derivative of that function with respect to S is 0. And you'll get some values from that guy. And this, of course, is going to depend on what's the relationship between your constants and K1 and Kd and all that good stuff in this case. We can say something about where this is at, though. Where does it have to be on this plot, on the left locus?
Between 0 and -1/10.
Yeah, somewhere between those two poles that are on the real axis. So it's going to be somewhere here. All right. So if I have a breakaway point there, and I know I have an asymptote of 180, what's left to sketch? What's going to happen?
It's going to come around.
Yeah. So I know that the open loop poles have to go to open loop zeros. So what happens is that where that should be symmetric. Okay. So our locus looks like this. It's a pretty version of this, and there's a will be a Jupyter notebook for this problem going up in a bit. Get that guy. Okay, so in this case, right? Remember, as I'm increasing the gains now, KP is going up. At some point, I break away. Right? Keep increasing KA, KP. Someplace I come back over to the real axis over here.
So as KP goes to infinity, your approach is zeros.
KP goes to is your gain, whatever parameter, it doesn't have to be, whatever, in this case, KP. Right? So as you increase your gain on any root locus, right, the closed loop poles go from the open loop poles to the open loop zeros. Right, so in this case over here, as I increase KP, I was going to this zero, and then there's one out at infinity because we have more poles than zero. In this case, I keep increasing KP. It goes to from open loop pole to open loop zero. It goes from open loop pole to open loop zero. Right, so where would I want to put the closed loop poles, given I can place them anywhere on that locus?
As far to the left.
Probably as far left as I want. As I can, right? And so if I can go as far left as I can, where is a good place?
Where they hit the
yeah, so I want them somewhere pretty close to the real axis over there, right? So in that case, which one of these would be have a faster response? This guy, right? Because remember, this zero is to the left of the, this pole is in the same location in both plots. Right.
Yeah, what's the benefit of the one on the right?
There's not any.
Okay, nothing.
That's kind of the point. If I can do this, then I probably want to. Well, there is some downside to this one, probably, though. What would that be, you think?
Faster response, more overshoot?
Well, not necessarily, because I have a pretty good amount of damping, right?
Oh, that's true. This is with the damping. Okay, I don't know. Oh, error. Maybe.
What kind of error?
That's the only thing I think of, steady state.
So I have the same physical system for both of these, right? Mm-hmm. Right? I'm making it move faster. What does that take? Yeah. This is going to take more actuator effort to make the same physical system move faster. Right? You don't get the faster response for free. You're paying for it with energy use. Or perhaps max, you know, peak actuator effort, a peak voltage you need, a peak current you might need for this motor. Right? So yeah, I can make it go faster if I have inflow infinite current, or have infinite current to allow me to drop infinite voltage across those terminals, but I might not. So we're going faster, but it's not free. You're paying for it somehow. So it could be that maybe, you know, maybe this is good enough. Maybe this is the better case for what kind of actuator limitations you have. I don't know. It's hard to say. Okay. All right, so we have some idea of what we want. Maybe, we probably, you know, we're kind of arguing so far that we want this relationship to be true. So that TD basically gives us some relationship between KP and KD. So how do I pick the exact values? How could I pick the exact values? I drop this motor in front of you. You can get its response and plot the response nice and pretty and get information back from.
So you would want your KP to be where you want your poles, your closed loop poles.
Okay. So yeah, I keep increasing KB. So I have some value of KD effectively, right, based on that ratio here. So I keep increasing KB until I get there. All right. So that gives me some analytical value that of the KP that I want. given some estimate of my motor parameters. Remember, this is all based, we have some model of the motor. Right. So I can get some estimate of what I want those gains to be. How would I make sure they're right on the real system?
Test it,
yeah? So yeah, I can, if I have really high confidence in my model, I model it, take the gain, you know, do something like this, figure out the KP, and then the optimal TD, and then I could shift this zero further left and do even better if I want, if I have that actuator effort available. And then, hey, I have a pretty good model, I'm just gonna try this set of gains right away. Let's say instead I don't know my motor so well, right? I have a hobby style motor, let's say, right? Where they're not going to give you all the constants you need to be able to calculate K1 and tau1. How do I pick my gains then? This depends on us knowing K1 and tau1, which are a function of those motor kind of physical properties, electrical properties. So we talked about this kind of analytical method. How do I get there if I don't know what those values are? Manual tuning stuff, okay. So what's that? Manual tuning stuff, yeah.
And the first step was to push it to almost unstable.
Yeah, so I take my closed loop system and, well, there's kind of a step, half step even before that. What do I do with KD or KI? Set them equal to zero. So I drop back and I have just this guy. Now. Okay. And I crank up KP, keep cranking up KP until I'm approaching instability. How do I know I'm approaching instability? Yeah, you have sustained oscillation. So it's undamped oscillation. You're approaching undamped. It's getting really lightly damped. I mean, it doesn't really decay any. All right? So I get there. Okay, then what? It's a good starting point. That's right. So I find the KP that gets me that sustained oscillation. Then I start the manual tuning. I drop KP to half or whatever that was as a starting point. What am I really looking for when I drop it to half? Close.
Quarter.
Yeah, so you're trying to find that. They call it quarter decay point or something like that in the kind of manual tuning that your book recommends. All right. So you crank KP up until it's oscillating, undamped. Drop KP back down, starting probably around a half of the value it was undamped, until the decay in one cycle is a one quarter of the peak amplitude. Okay. Then what? And you can tweak KD or K and KI if you need to. Yeah. So if we didn't know K1 and tau, we kind of have to start going down that road, either manually tuning that way or some other experimental way to do it. And even though kind of we'll talk about a few other methods to do it more analytically than just tweaking stuff like that. But even those are tweaking stuff, just being smarter about how you tweak it. So like I said, there'll be a Jupyter notebook for this, probably up after 201 today, that'll walk through this example, plot some responses, root locus is plotted. You can play with, and I would highly recommend that you play with TD and see how the root locus changes, play with KP, see how the response changes. So try to develop some intuition about how, as the poles move around the root locus, how's the response change? As those poles and zeros change location on the pole zero map, how does the response change? How does the root locus change? All
right. How would this change with the PI controller?
Hang on for about 2 minutes and we'll get to a PI controller. A little bit different system, but same kind of process, yeah.
So, like you said, the one on the right, the loci in between the pole and the zero,
mm-hmm.
would take.
Setting
the max speed.
Yeah, so we talked about it briefly, that there's this idea of dominant poles, right? And you can get some kind of heuristics on when one set of poles or a pole dominates the response over the others. So depending on the distance between these poles, this lower one can end up dominating the response. So it's going to dictate the rise time, settling time, all that kind of stuff. Happens over here as well. But you have both these poles are kind of going to end up, if you squeeze them back this way, in kind of the same place, I think is a good choice for these in this case. So you don't have a dominant set of poles. Those closed loop poles are going to be over here at about the same place. But in any case, the kind of rightmost pole or poles, if they're a complex conjugate pair, are largely what dictate the speed of your response. That flexible mode is what's going to be the slowest one. Other questions? Okay, let's walk through another example. That up probably. Cheat a little bit. That's going to be something different. That's going to be something different. That's going to be something different. And we'll erase that when we get to it. All right, so the system I have now. A mass with some input force u, and we have the wheels, but I'm saying, hey, well, there is actually some kind of resistance to this thing moving, right? There's some friction in the wheels that we can basically model as a viscous damper, or we're in a region where the air resistance looks like a viscous damper. Or this is a really simple model of a boat in water where I have some force, some propulsion force from my outboard motors, and then the water drag looks something like a viscous damper. So there's a lot of things that this could actually represent as kind of a simple case. And we want to make x track xt. So I want to choose, I'm going to try to choose my input force u to make x go where I want it. Right, this is a pretty common control problem. Right. So in this case, I have xd there. My output is x. I have some control force that I'm going to apply to the system. Okay. What's the equation of motion for this system? Kind of have a free body diagram, almost, pretty much.
Mx equals u minus dx.
That's right. So I could write u. I could do the transfer function of this guy if I wanted, right? Or I can write it like that. All right. So we had a request for a PI controller. Let's look at a PI controller. It's a form of a PI controller. That's right. Okay, we can write it that way. All right. We also can see, or could write it this way. And we'll see, we'll kind of have to write it that way if we want only one parameter to tweak in our, if we're going to draw a root locus. Right? So we can define this constant of proportionality between Kp and Ki. That must be. Never remember, so it's y by Kp. Must be that way, right? Yeah. Okay. All right. So then, we can look at GCGP. Right, so we do know need these plots already. And I forgot an S somewhere, didn't I? Sorry about that. Let me clean this up for you. That looks better. Okay. So what can we say about open loop poles and zeros? How about open loop poles? Two at zero. All right. So we have a kind of similar case to what we had before, where we're kind of dictating, we get to choose Ti, right? But this is a fixed parameter of the system. So there's actually kind of two sides to this root locus. We have repeated poles at zero. Both cases. Okay. We have a pole at minus B over M. And we have a zero at minus 1 over Ti. And like I could be between that series of poles. Or it could be to the left of them. Okay. So, what do I can I say about this system already? Second order, third order. Third order, I got three poles, third order. You got a type 2? Yep. So what does that say? Tell us about steady-state error to step input.
It's a finite error.
To step input.
Zero.
What about steady-state error to a ramp input?
Still zero.
Still zero. What about steady-state error to a parabolic or acceleration input?
That's a finite.
Now it's finite. Yeah. Okay. So if we're going to draw the root locus and try to get some idea about what the closed loop poles for this thing might look like, depending on what we choose Ti to be, what can we do next? Where do I have loci on the real axis? So in all this region here, I have two poles to the right. So there's nothing on the real axis there. And same thing over here. And if I'm over here, I have four poles and zeros to the right, so there's nothing there. Same thing. Okay. How many separate loci are there?
Three.
Why? We have more poles than zeros and three poles, so we have three separate loci. Right.
Well, we have the same number.
Hang on to that question for just a little while. We'll get to that. And it gets a little bit even more interesting if you have more zeros than poles. Okay. So we have two loci. We know we have three separate loci for both of these guys. So we kind of have a ways to go on both of these plots, right? Maybe one of these is done now. All right, so what's next?
Asymptotes.
Asymptotes, yeah. So we have three poles and one zero this time, so that's over two. Okay.
Over two,
yeah, 1/2 times that, sorry. Can we say anything about the stability of the system already? Maybe not yet. Hang on 1 second. We're going to be able to in just a second. Okay. So the angle there was n minus 1 should just be that, right? So the n minus m is just 2 in this case. And the other at Negative 90, 270 or negative 90. Okay. So now I have 90 asymptotes at 90 degrees. Okay. Won't cross the imaginary axis. Why do you say that? Okay. Okay, maybe. So this relationship here,
right?
It's kind of these guys, right? That this is the same relationship we're looking at. So let's go a half step further. Where is the breakaway point for this system? There's only one place it can be.
It's got to be in between two poles.
It's got to be in between two poles. It's a zero. So my breakaway point is at zero. Okay, so look at this relationship. If 1 over Ti is greater than B over M, where are the asymptotes?
On the right side of the imaginary axis.
Right. So if 1 over Ti is greater than, that's this case, right? 1 over Ti. No. Which one is it? Which one of these cases? Okay, so one of the cases we have. Okay, let's do some basic math. It's the one on the right, right?
Yes.
Right. So if that's true, you have an asymptote over here and a breakaway point there, where does the locus go?
Goes towards the asymptote.
Is this system stable for any non-zero value? Okay.
No.
Okay. So if we have 1 over Ti greater than B over M, we can't ever make the system stable with a PI controller. It's impossible. Can't do it. Okay. And then if it's not that, then we have some asymptote over there. Right? And we can tune its location by tuning Ti, basically. Right? But we're going to get breakaway, another breakaway point's there. Let me get that. And depending on what you pick, you know, again, you can move this a little bit based on that relationship, based on Ti. Yeah, sorry, I drew a little bit light. It's somewhere over here in the positive real land, depending on this relationship. No, not necessarily. Because what you could be doing is pushing at just at the wrong times.
Okay.
That's really kind of what instability ends up being, is that my controller is trying to do stuff and it's just timing it wrong.
Okay, so you're saying that anytime over Ti is less than negative Ti, anytime that's the case, then it's an unstable system.
Yeah, so it's basically whenever this asymptote location gets pushed over into the right-hand plane. And because it's 90 degrees, and we know the breakaway point's at zero, this locus is going to approach that asymptote.
The breakaway points you said were always between two poles?
Yes.
Okay. So then why can't it be left gravity? Why can't it be between the zero and negative
It's zero, not a pole. Breakaway points are between two poles.
Negative B over A is a pole, right? Other gravity's the same as
everyone. Yeah, so in that case, you know that because this pole is going to go to that zero.
Oh, I see.
Okay. Yeah, there you go. You got it.
Right.
Right. So there's actually no... It can't be here because there's no locus there.
Between two poles, but to the left are every
hour. That's right. You got it. Sorry. Okay. So then, how do I pick Kp and Ki? So I know if I kind of have an idea of the damping and mass in my system, I would know where I need Ti to be, at least. So how do I pick Kp and Ki once I have that information?
What's your response? What do you want your response to be? You want it to be fast?
Yeah.
Okay. So get as close to negative 1 over Ti as you can.
Okay. So if I increase the gain, so we're saying, like, we can't use this, basically. This guy's out. As is.
Maybe.
All right. So I start increasing my gains here. Yeah, this pole, he's going to move to the left and get faster. What happens to these two guys, though? Yeah, so I might have, they're going to become complex conjugate pairs. What's that pole, what's the response for that complex conjugate pair of poles look like?
It's faster.
It's faster, yeah.
It's less damped.
Sides
less damped than down here way. Than here.
Maybe put it like where it changes. What do they call those points? Where
the natural frequency increase. Yeah, the farther I go up here, the farther that vector is going to be, the higher my natural frequency is going to be. So you're going to end up with some oscillatory response here, basically, if you're just using a PI controller. So what can I do to fix all that? I could add a derivative gain.
Yeah,
this is not helping really so much.
It just gets rid of error eventually, but it doesn't do anything to your data.
That's right. Yeah.
There is a loci between the two poles at zero.
Yeah, so if you look kind of, I mean, they're at zero, but to the right of one of them is the other one. So you have an odd number to the right, so there's loci in between.
In that case before where it was like the limit.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, if you don't know, if we have an idea of B and M, we can do this analytically. What can you do if you can't do it analytically?
Maybe.
I think in this case, in particular since we're using PIA instead of PD, we can do a little bit better than just straight up manual tuning.
Okay.
What can we do? Two old guys came up with the method.
Ziegler-Nichols,
yeah. So Ziegler-Nichols, what's the first step for Ziegler-Nichols?
Push it to the breaking point.
So set KD, KI to zero. Push it until it's almost unstable. So you want undamped or very lightly damped oscillations. What does that define for you in terms of Ziegler-Nichols?
Ultimate gain.
Yeah, ultimate gain and then the period. So you look at the period of oscillation getting there, record that. And then you can use those two parameters to give you the first guess of the gains to, in Kp and Ki. All right, and then you're probably still going to have to tune from there to get the response you want. But you just once you have K, the ultimate gain ultimate period, you just look it up in that Ziegler-Nichols table. And you have guesses, you have ballpark figures what those gains should be. And you can adjust. All right. That's it.
So
we got these backwards in the drawing. The notes are right, though. So
the graph should be like
these are flipped.
Yeah,
they're right in my notes, though, if you want to check my notes and correct yours.